Then I'll leave it once. We're just going to have a little Q&A session with the director. Michael Kang is coming on down. Great movie, eh? So I'm just going to start off with a couple questions. You wrote this movie with a co-writer who was a reporter with the Village Voice. Can you just tell us a little bit about how the two of you came up with the story?
We had met, actually he was doing an article for the Village Voice about filmmakers, and so he just interviewed me for that, and we started talking, and we realized we had very similar backgrounds. He's also Korean-American, and I had just been ruminating about an idea, because there was a friend of mine who worked for a nonprofit in New York that dealt with gang kids, and had told me about this one case about a 14-year-old kid who was accused of a murder and forced into a confession. And that kept kind of playing in my head, but I didn't really know that world completely. And then when I met Edmund, it just made sense, because he had been doing a year-long expose following a gangster around all of New York. And so with his research and you know, my dramatic expertise, we kind of came together and just started working on it. We actually ended up writing, it took us about 5 years to write the script, and it was a lot of times just like hills and valleys where we wouldn't touch it for months and months, and then come back to it. And mainly, we were each other's cheerleader. We'd be like, no, we should make this film. We should try and do it.
What kind of stuff did the two of you do in terms of research for the script development, and how accurate a portrayal of that is the Korean Canadian or Korean Americans in New York?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's big movie-esque things that happen in the film, but the base layer of it is all based on the research. I mean, the room salon that we based it on was a real room salon. It was actually called Don't Tell Mamas, Not Mamas. You know, the hierarchies and the way that the kind of infrastructure of that world and kind of the culture was all very much what like we had done through Edmund's research for following this guy around, and also my own research of just getting to know the people of Queens and understanding what that world was about.
Now, when this film showed at Tribeca last year at a Q&A, you told the audience that you wrote The Departed but ended up shooting The Mean Streets. Can you kind of just tell us about how it grew from the script into what the eventual product was?
Well, like I said, there was a lot of subplots that we wanted to explore within this thing that we ended up having to cut out. But we hope that a lot of it kind of comes through in the periphery. But yeah, I mean, it was difficult. This was an experiment. CJ Entertainment, which is the biggest studio in Korea, came on board and financed the project, and it was. But you know, for them, it was an experiment to see. Because they've been trying to get into Hollywood somehow. They have been on multiple occasions, and they've invested in Hollywood movies, but they felt like they didn't really have very much creative input or emotional connection to the work. They were just signing checks over. And with this one, it was more like they were experimenting with the idea of, well, maybe if we invest in a Korean-American filmmaker, maybe we'll get more out of it. And I think that everybody's energy was in that direction. It was kind of trying to tell a story that we didn't normally get to see.
Can you just tell about your experience working with a South Korean production company?
For the most part, it was great. I mean, probably people don't realize that the guy who gets killed in the very beginning of the film, he's a huge star in Korea. I mean, he's like the Tom Hanks of Korea. And that wouldn't have existed, that cameo wouldn't have existed without the partnership of CJ Entertainment. And a lot of the, like, Joon Kim also, who plays Mike in the movie, he's a Korean actor. He lives in Korea. He grew up in Hong Kong, actually, and he's trilingual. And so there was a lot of, you know, borrowing from each other and collaborating in that way. And also, I mean, the biggest challenge was probably kind of explaining how you have to make film in America versus how films are made in Korea. They don't really have unions in Korea, and we do in the States. So that concept was a little bit tough. But beyond that, I mean, at least everybody's heart was in the right place.
Where do you see yourself in terms of a lot of the new cinema that's been coming out of Korea in recent years?
I don't think I'm really part of that. I mean, I think that my goal was that to somehow bridge the two worlds. You know, a lot of the influences for this film were from the crime dramas from the 70s, but we also aesthetically wanted to go and give, you know, kind of homage to, you know, Old Boy and Chingu and these more contemporary new Korean wave films. So it was, we were really trying to bridge the gap there, but I don't think that I could put myself on the same plane with those guys.
Very modest. I'm just gonna open it up to the floor right now, so if anyone has a question for Michael, maybe stand up. You, sir, in the back. Try and speak up, please. It's a pretty big room.
Yeah, sure. So, why did you let Mr. Jones live?
At the end of the film, why does, because there were versions of the script where we kill him at the end, and to us, that felt like an easy out. And for me, I don't know if it came across, but to me, it's almost worse. He's living a very empty life at that point. I mean, he's gotten everything he's wanted, but it's meaningless. And he's actually just, there's almost self-awareness of that. He's another cog in this kind of cycle of violence. Let me hear the first one.
And then I'll...
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think that to me, you know, I'm kind of a student of Asian American film, and a lot of times I felt like, you know, I owe a lot to Wayne Wang, and I love the Joy Luck Club and all that, but I feel like what a lot of times what happens is they deal with one class or one type of Asian American, like second generation upper middle class, and to me I wanted to show there wasn't that much difference between either side. The second generation, even though he's so culturally divorced from his own culture, he's still pretty much the same as this guy who's a 1.5, and that actually there's somewhere in between that working together might, some sort of opening up of communication. Well, we had to import one from Canada, Grace Park, and then John Cho, who's a Hollywood actor, and June Kim came from Korea, but everybody else was New York based, except for the cameo, the big cameo, the Tom Hanks guy, Jung Jin-ho. Everybody was pretty much, I mean, one of the things that I really wanted to do, especially with the peripheral characters, was, you know, it wasn't necessarily important to me to cast, like, guys who have been acting in whatever films or doing like guest roles as like gangster number one or, you know, delivery guy number two on Law and Order, but find people who actually understood this experience. A lot of those kids who were in like Mike's crew were actually kids who grew up in Flushing, knew that world, had been in gangs. One of the guys actually before the day before his shoot, we actually had to juggle the schedule around because he got arrested, and then had to, you know, make it work so that he could come back after he got released, and another guy had actually just come out of prison like a few months before he started working on the film.
Any questions from that side of the room?
Were there ever any versions of
the
script that we
didn't
even shot
when
we actually saw
Kevin
and
that
Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, we went back and forth on that, and that was part of the saying that we're writing The Departed and we had to shoot Mean Streets. It was a lot smaller budget than what you might imagine from looking at it. Like, to me, it was important to give this story an epic feeling. And so there were some hard decisions to be made, and ultimately I decided that it really wasn't about Kevin. It never was about Kevin. And that would almost be too easy to go there. And so it was... When I watch it a second time, I kind of track John, and I go, he never gave a shit about this kid. It was always about himself, and that was really the message, and I wanted that to be be the thing, not to get dissuaded or distracted by a scene with Kevin and them hugging and crying or something. In Flushing, yes. On West 32nd, there was two camps. And actually, younger kids, kids who had gone through this, young 20s, people in their 20s who had gone through this experience have come up to me and been like, "That, thank you for doing it right, like showing it accurately." But there's always a hesitancy. I don't want to make too many generalizations, but with the older generation of Koreans, a lot of times, we don't want to put our dirty laundry out there. We don't want people to know about this stuff, so we kind of pretend it doesn't exist. And so there was a little bit of that backlash. But for the most part, when they saw the film, they kind of changed their mind. There was only one business owner on the street who actually, it wasn't even about that. He started doing this huge campaign against us, saying that we were showing Koreans in a bad light, and this is totally irresponsible. And he wrote to his congressman and had the rights of Korea. And so it was like this really big deal. But what it stemmed from was we went there to ask if we could use his restaurant as a location. And he said, yeah, you can use it for half day for $40,000, which was like twice our entire location budget. So we were like, okay, sorry, thank you, we'll move on. And as soon as that happened, all of a sudden he started this weird campaign and was like calling me out and putting like full page ads in the New Korean newspaper and going on the radio. And so, I mean, most of the time I think most people we won over, except for that guy. And don't eat at Wando restaurant. It's always a challenge. I mean, the main thing is try and get money for different projects. I have a bunch of different things in development. I've been working on a pilot for HBO that I'm trying to get off the ground. That one is actually a Chinatown story. It's a family drama that takes place in Chinatown. You know the buses that go to the casinos? It's about a family that owns one of those buses. I'm also working with Gene Yang, who wrote a graphic novel called American Born Chinese. You know, some people might have read it. I'm trying to get an adaptation of that. And, also, me and Edmund, my co-writer, are working on a graphic novel for Vertigo, so we're hoping that goes through. I'm kind of all over the place. There's also an African story. I'm
just sort of curious, how you
decided
to write this from CJ.
I wish I could tell you exactly. I wish there was a step. It just was like a perfect storm of things. There's a CJ has a U.S. office that kind of sits there and deals with it, bringing their Korean films to America. But they really wanted to like prove their worth, and so that happened at the same time as they read my script, and we went to Korea together and talked to the whole board, and we were, you know, lots of late night karaoke, drinking lots of soju, and somehow we came out with a deal at the end after 2 weeks, and it was done.
Thank you, Michael. That's all the time we have for Q&A. I'm sure you can attack him afterwards outside. But I want to thank everyone for coming. Thank you, Nat. Thank you, Korean Canadian lawyers. Hope to see everyone tomorrow for closing night. And good night, and stay the fuck out of Queens.